Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Welcome to another episode of Broadway Breakdown. I am one of your two hosts, Matt Koplik.
And I am one of your other two hosts, John Wascavage. I'm hoping that we're filming. Yeah, we're filming. We'd like to invite Mr. Koplik to set, please. I'm hoping that we're recording correctly because I feel like our countdown was like slightly like 1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah, no. Thank God we don't work in like TV because and like live productions, because we would be that guy who would go 5, 4, 1, 2, 9 and like Diane Sawyer would be, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, truly, it was jarring, and I was the one doing it, you know.
Yeah,
I was still I was like, what the fuck is he doing?
It should be noted, right as we started, that was probably like our third attempt to count ourselves in. So
truly, yeah,
It's a great Wednesday afternoon, y'all. Happy
Good morning,
Wednesday.
Everyone. How are you all doing? Pause. Wait for everyone's reaction. That's great.
Good for you. So happy to hear.
So happy to hear about that. Wow. You're really rocking this thing called life. Good for you, listener. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing well. I have been busy like a little fucking bee.
And like a little bee.
It's like a little bee just scrambling around trying to, you know, live life to my fullest potential.
Yes.
I've been trying to get myself some work, fitness, and hobbies. And
yes.
that's a little throwback from last episode, everybody, in case you don't remember. So the series that I've been developing, I've mentioned it a few times before. We did a full reading of the entire thing last week, like all 8 episodes, and it was great, but it was also really... Wait, what?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, how'd it go? But you answered that.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Thrilling banter here happening at Broadway Breakdown already.
We really are on top of the ball. It went really well, which is wonderful, and we're moving forward with that, but it's just, like, it's stressful to, like, with when it comes to readings, you have to find the place, you have to coordinate the people, you have to make sure everyone is on page with the scripts, and
you have to get the goat, you have to get the sacrificial goat.
Yeah, exactly. Finding the goat was actually the easiest part, but finding the right knife to do it with was like that was tough. Yeah, because it has to go deep enough. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then I was also stupidly doing double duty of reading one of the main characters and doing side-along edits, so I don't know why I did that to myself. But once that was over, I was able to put all my energy into this and started editing the last episode and spent all my time listening to Kelly Clarkson, and now I'm still listening to Kelly Clarkson.
You know, I actually haven't finished our last episode. Don't hate me.
I do hate you.
I'm very excited to finish it. Because I was enjoying it a lot. But I tell you, you've had me, even though I haven't listened to it, I haven't finished listening to it yet. You've had me on a Kelly Clarkson kick, a KCK,
yeah,
if you will.
A KCK. She is my friend Mike texted me after the
our
episode
friend
went up,
Mike.
Oh, right. I keep forgetting that you know him too.
So
our friend Mike.
All of our friends.
I intend to claim all of our friends. Our friend Mike, who, by the way, directed a Nymph show again this summer, which I saw last night.
How was it?
Yeah, Between Sea and Sky, I believe it's called. It was really lovely. I did a table read of the script for him a month or so ago. And I remember reading the script, and he was like, so, give us your thoughts. And he's like, be honest. And we're all kind of like, okay, we don't know what this show's about. Like, it makes no sense. It was very, it goes back and forth with what's real, what's not, and yada, yada. But they did a lot of work on the scripts between then and now, and it works a lot better. And he did a very lovely job with the visuals, staging, the ensemble work. There was a really beautiful visual. He does a really great job. They did a really cool exit with a character involving a big blue sheet that was really lovely and had a lot of metaphors to it. So congrats, Mike. This is all to say, this isn't about him. he texted me after the last episode, and he said, after your jukebox musical, was Don't Let the Moment Die? Was that the name of the...
Yes, Don't Let the Moment Die.
Mike goes, after that episode, Kelly Clarkson has become my breakup goddess. And I'm like, she's become my breakup goddess.
She truly is.
She's the voice of a breakup generation. She's wonderful.
I want to break up with everyone just to listen to a Chloe Clarkson clong.
A Chloe Clarkson song.
A Chloe Clarkson clong.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar. You're the top.
You're going to get me in a weird mood today. And I actually haven't even told you about this, but you finish your story and then I'll explain to you
My story is finished. All I was going to say was, I'm here for your weird mood. We've updated the world on what's going on with me and my illustrious life. So let's hear about John. Where's John at? Who's she? Where's she at?
She is on a journey right now. So starting to the future, we're going back to the future. Starting today, I am doing a month without coffee, alcohol, or a very famous television show called Weeds, let's say. I'm doing 3 months without coffee, alcohol, and the TV show Weeds. And so it's interesting because I have not had coffee a day in my life since I started when I was around 22, 23. Mm-hmm. And I've slowly been weaning myself off. And I don't feel awful. I actually feel quite good. Mm-hmm. I just feel weird. Have you ever done this? Have you ever done anything like this?
Yeah, I've done time off without coffee. I don't think I've ever gone as long as 3 months. What I'll usually
do. Oh, wait,
did
I say 3 months? I meant a month.
You said 3 months. Just a month. Okay.
It begins.
That's what I mean.
It's a weird time for me. My brain feels good, but my brain feels as if it's bobbing for apples. You know what I mean?
We're just trying to figure it out.
Yeah. I meant a month. I meant a month.
You meant a month. Okay. Well, I mean, I have gone like a week and a half without coffee, and it's more sort of just kind of like to see if I could and to keep myself from being too dependent on it. Because there have been days where I get like 4 coffees. I'm like, that is too much. I'm going to go like 3 days without coffee at all. And then I do. Yeah. So I've gotten myself down to about like a cup a day. Every now and then, too, depending where I'm at. But I feel like that's like a very healthy place to be, 1 cup in the morning.
Yeah, well, and I miss it. Like, it was interesting. Even today, just looking at my coffee maker at this housing, we had a moment where we locked eyes, and I said, you know, I'm sorry. It's really not you. It's me. I've reached a place in our relationship where I just need a little space. And they were really, really cool about it. But here's the twist. So I'm not just doing kind of like those kind of vices for maybe not the whole month, but for the better part of this month. And actually, I haven't even announced this online, but by the time that this airs, it will be true. I'm taking a little break from social meds.
Okay.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to know what's up with you? Am I supposed to like just text you and ask?
I guess that's been the weirdest thing, has been just trying to tell people that I'm closest to that. It's not because I'm, you know, like, fake news. Oh, everything's awful on social media. I mean, it is. That's a given, you know?
Yeah. You just know that.
If I'm not giving it up because I finally reached a breaking point. I reached my breaking point at 11/9/2016, you know? I broke then. I'm doing it just because I've never done Lent. My extremely religious family, we weren't Catholic, so we didn't believe in Lent. So it was like, those dumb Catholics, what are they doing? Mm. Plus, we didn't have any vices to begin with, as the kind of Christians we were. You know, I didn't have anything
no,
like that.
No, nothing at all.
And so I didn't want... I just kind of wanted to see what a period of my life would be like without just things that kind of cloud what I want to be doing. You know, I have a lot of writing projects that I'm currently working on and about to start. And I just had this thought of, instead of sitting on my phone for an hour before I start writing,
constantly reloading, constantly just like clicking the feed, just constantly like double tapping the feed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like Facebook masturbation. Like you just keep like clicking and clicking and clicking, being like, is this gonna be the one? Mm-hmm. Is this gonna be the one that like makes me no, it's disappointing. You know, it's always that for me. And so I just kind of want to cut that out for a while and just see what's going on. Just like a little check at time with John Stephen Wascavage.
I think that's good. Yeah, sort of talk to John. See what he needs, what he wants.
Yeah.
I like that for you. To quote the great Alexis Rose, love that journey for me.
If I can't take my coffee break, God is the sense of enterprise. God and something within me.
Should we discuss some Broadway? I feel like we should. Broadway,
yeah,
or
of course
theater,
I want to. That's all. That's the only thing I ever want to talk about.
I mean, the only thing that truly gives me happiness.
True.
So, yeah, I would like to start off with probably the biggest news, but also sort of the most delayed news. And the reason why is because when this news came out, we had just recorded our last episode, and we didn't really have the time to record again.
Yes.
And to give you guys some perspective on how we feel about this, when the news came out. I think either I texted you or you texted me,
let me check the receipts, Diane.
Okay, but Jesus Christ. But either way, John responded to this news of, where was this 48 hours ago? Because that was when we last recorded, and like we could have talked about it for days.
Yeah.
Those of you not in the know.
Mamma Mia.
What?
Wait, I'm rereading our texts.
Oh, well, I do want to talk about Mamma Mia.
You said... Because, like, Cats... I'm directly quoting you. Because, like, Cats and Mamma Mia must be discussed. Did you see Mamma Mia 2?
Did I see Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again? I did indeed.
Yeah.
Did you see Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again?
No.
Okay.
So, we have to talk about that, too. Because I'm very excited to talk about both of these things.
Okay. Well, let's set the scene, then.
Let's start with the kitty news first. I was going to say shitty, but instead I decided to do kitty news.
The kitty news.
They're making a Cats movie, y'all.
They're making a Cats movie. And honestly, I'm here for it and also questioning it at the same time.
I'm here. You know, I guess we have to be here for it. It's
happening.
So absurd. I haven't actually read an article about it because I can't get past a headline. I read the headline and I immediately just have to poop. You know, I read the headline, Taylor Swift is starring in a movie musical, and I'm just like, oh, my bowels.
Yeah.
So I haven't actually read the article. Is it going to be them as humans? Or is
That's
it
a great question.
Cats?
No one truly knows because
they
said it is a live action movie. What that entails.
What does live action mean?
Again, great question. I don't know. I've been told live action and the motion sensory animation combined. So it's like, I guess they're taking live footage of cats and using CGI from motion sensors like they did in Polar Express, I guess, to create these hybrid versions of cats that include like the facial tics of like Taylor Swift as well as movement. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like, are we just going to see an actual kitty cat doing pirouettes and then belting out Memory on a real trash can? Is that what we're going to see?
Why?
And Tom Hooper is directing it, which is strange because he was all about, like, gritty realism for Les Mis, and that's not cats.
I hope they're all just close-ups, too. Do you remember how many close-ups were in Les Mis?
I hope it's just
see cats' faces.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
I would be more wildly interested in this movie if it were someone like a Baz Luhrmann or like a Quentin Tarantino, just someone so batshit with their visuals that you could just go, yeah, it's going to be an acid trip, but it could be so much fun. Like the Tommy movie. Have you ever seen the movie version of Tommy?
No, I've never seen Tommy, period.
I mean, Tommy's is great music, and the stage show actually works really well. But the movie version of Tommy, the one from the 70s with Anne Margaret and Elton John and all those people, it is it it honestly makes no sense. The entire thing is an acid trip, and it's brilliant. And the like, there is a scene where Anne Margaret is watching Tommy win pinball on the TV, and they're all like rich and famous now because he's rich and famous, and she's in this giant white bedroom wearing minks and whatnot. And she gets super drunk, and she throws her champagne bottle at the TV, and it starts to vomit out soap bubbles, then melted chocolate, and then baked beans, and then she like throws it all around the room for like a solid minute and a half.
You know, I swear to God, if I had a nickel for how many times my effing TV just started spewing up Bush's baked beans, that's their secret.
This is why you're going on your alcohol cleanse, though, too, right?
This is why I'm going on my cleanse, because that little monologue right there, that's my monologue. That's my journey. That's my narrative, you know?
Exactly. I mean, I've been going to Sharper Image or Best Buy all these years trying to find a TV that would vomit out baked beans and melted chocolate, and
they
can't do it for me. But, like, that's kind of what I want from a Cats movie. I just want something so fucking out there. It's gonna be stupid, but it'll be entertaining.
It's gonna be really dumb.
I just don't know. Like, what's gonna what is it? What is it? And who are they all playing? We know that Jennifer Hudson's playing Grisabella, but who the fuck is Taylor Swift playing?
I can only hope it's Old Deuteronomy, because that is the only other Cat's name I know. That and Skimbleshanks and Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah. Not Rumpelstiltskin, you stupid bitch. Oh, Jesus Christ.
That and Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is my favorite cat from Cats.
Done. This is all to say that the Cats movie, I hope it's as batshit as Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again.
Yeah. I want to hear all about your Mamma Mia's.
Oh my God. Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again. I made the giant mistake of seeing that movie sober. That was mistake numero uno.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. I'm def not going to see it now because I'm sober this month. So I'll wait till September, see it later.
I met up with two friends after work to see it, and I just like didn't have time to get a drink beforehand. And I'm not condoning that, you know, in order to get through the day one must drink, although these days that's kind of true. Specifically like Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again, which, by the way, I will never not say that movie's full title.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah. So like I don't know. I can understand people enjoying the movie. What I can't understand is people saying how like much better it is than the first one. Because like, here's the thing.
That's what everyone's been saying.
It's a bad movie. Like, it is really, really
terrible. Thank you for saying these words out loud.
It is terrible. I mean, and you can have a fun time watching it. I totally understand that.
Sure.
To imply that it's even remotely well made or concise is like baffling to me. the first movie is stupid. Yeah, like it totally is. But and it's like not physically well made. Like Phyllida Lloyd did not know how to make a movie. So like there are shot inconsistencies and lighting inconsistencies and busy camera work. Like it's a lot. But it's still fun, and honestly it's because the stage show is, you know, very solidly constructed to the point that like it just flows and it works. Like, they have all the right songs, they totally understand what kind of property they are, and they just sort of follow it through. The sequel, like, I can't rightfully say. The majority of the songs that aren't from the first one are not good ABBA songs. Like, I don't rightly know most of them.
Wait, say that again.
So, like, they use... Okay, the sequel, they use a lot of... They try to do other ABBA songs that weren't in the first one, like When I Kissed the Teacher.
Right, but there's still a lot of repeats, right? That's the other
thing. They do some repeats. They do Dancing Queen again. They do Mamma Mia
Super
again.
Super Trooper, right?
No, they don't do Super Trooper. At least I don't think so.
I thought someone said that there was like a big Super Trooper, like,
Oh, right. That's in, it's in the mega mix in the credits. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not like, it's not in the movie movie. The movie movie, they do Mamma Mia again. They do Dancing Queen again. And I think they do, I Have a Dream again.
Oh God. Why?
I mean, who's to say? Just like, okay. So I'll give you some things. Please. It goes back and forth in time. They do, like, present day, where Meryl Streep is dead. And then back in the day when Meryl Streep was Lily James and she, like, just got out of college and whatnot. And there are two moments that I think pretty much, like, define the movie.
Okay.
One is when Lily James, like, she graduates college and she tells her friends, I'm going to go on a summer adventure and I'm going to go through Europe and I'm going to make my way to Greece because I hear there's this beautiful island, blah, blah, blah. She gets to Paris where she meets young Colin Firth, and like the day that they meet, they're sitting having lunch in this French restaurant, and which makes sense because it's Paris. And he says to her, Donna, I want you to be my first time. And she goes, oh, Harry, we've only just met. And he goes, well, when you know, you know. Waterloo, 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 Waterloo. And they go. Yeah, it's like full on out of Grease too, this number, because they involve the entire restaurant and they like do recreations of Napoleon and Waterloo, and they do a visual gag where they show both of their heads on French platters like being served and like dancing waiters. Like,
That's the most overused bit ever.
Yeah, and like also makes no sense. I'm just like, right. What does this have to do with anything?
I always knew that song was about losing your virginity in France, but
yeah, but like at the same time, I couldn't. The other thing, this is that it's become my line of the summer, is they try really hard to make Andy Garcia like a thirst trap, and yes, like he's a Andy Garcia. You would probably remember him as the villain in Ocean's 11. He's never the dude that owns the casino. Well then let's just never have nice things then.
We don't.
Oh God. Those of you who do know who Andy Garcia is, he's an older actor. He's been around for a while. He was, I think he was in Godfather 3. Anyway, older Italian actor or Spanish actor. Forgive me for generalizing right now, but I just don't care enough about him to really look into it.
Whoa.
It's not shade. He's just like not important enough to my life. But Vulture keeps saying that it's the summer of thirsting after Andy Garcia because he also did Book Club where he was Diane Keaton's romantic love interest.
Oh.
And now he's in Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again. And I'm just like, I don't buy it because like he is playing a daddy, but he just like doesn't look good. He just looks kind of tired. But
I need to Google him. I need to see
him. Google him.
I need to see
the point movie. Is that he's supposed... So, like, the Amanda Seyfried modern-day plot line is that Meryl Streep's dead, and she's, like, trying to reopen the hotel in honor of Meryl Streep. Which, by the way, the first photo they show of her in the hotel is a production still from the first movie. They're like, oh, Donna, we miss you. And it's a full-on publicity photo from the first Mamma Mia movie.
I love
it's
that
It's the one of her, like, holding the champagne...
I love
it's
that
one of her holding
so
champagne
much.
Glass like over her shoulder. Yeah, it's just like, oh, you couldn't get a single candid shot of Meryl Streep, so you stole a publicity photo from the first one.
What? This is the person they're saying is what?
Yeah, Andy Garcia, you found him.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Goodbye, everybody.
Yeah, it's fun times, but he is supposed to be like the new general manager of the hotel that Amanda Seyfried and Pierce Brosnan are, like, reopening in honor of Meryl Streep. And so, like, Amanda Seyfried's whole plot line is, you know, oh, no, I want everything to be perfect for the grand reopening. Plus, like, Sky, my hot husband, is in America, and we have long-distance issues. But that, like,
wait, did they
gets
get
resolved. They don't say. It's also, like, not clear how long it's been since the last movie.
God,
it's
I hope
been
it's 10 been
years
week.
Since the last movie came out. But then when Cher shows up, Amanda Seyfried's like, like, you waited 25 years to finally be a grandma. I'm like, I'm sorry. Am I supposed to believe Amanda Seyfried's 25 now? Because she looks like a mother on Big Little Lies with her, like, with her poncho and her beautiful hair. Like, she looks like a mother.
Yes.
It's whatever. But so Andy Garcia becomes the general manager for this hotel. And when Christine Baranski and Julie Walters come to, like, help Amanda Seyfried out with the opening of the hotel, she's like, here's our general manager, Andy Garcia. And they play this, like, hot Latin music to show that he's a hot daddy. Mm. And Christine Baranski looks at him and she goes, be still, my beating vagina. And Waterloo is Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again, in a nutshell.
Be still, my beating vagina.
And because she's international treasure, Christine Baranski,
yeah,
she sells it.
Oh,
but like, I sat there with my friends, all of us totally sober, like going in really expecting this movie to just like give us the best time we wanted. And we just went.
Everyone's been saying it's so good. I just want to applaud whatever screenwriter specifically wrote that line, because congrats to you. You've really taken what people, writers like Virginia Woolf before you, have set the railroad tracks so that you can just go full steam ahead.
God damn it.
Say it one more time. I just want to relish in each word.
So I need you to say, like, here's Andy Garcia.
Okay. Here's Andy Garcia.
Be still, my beating vagina.
I want that embroidered on my casket. I want people to walk up and be super sad and be like, "Oh, John, well, wait, does that say be still, my beating vagina?" You know,
there's a song called Angel Eyes, I think. Yeah, where Julie Anal Eyes? Anal Eyes. Listen, bitch, this entire movie could be called Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again, # Anal Eyes. Or Analyze This, I suppose.
Analyze This.
But, has anyone made a gay porn version of the movie Analyze This?
I know, I was just thinking that too. I want to Google it, but at the same time, I don't want to Google it.
It should be a gay porno. They have a song called Angel Eyes where they're telling Amanda Seyfried, like, how men suck. Mm. And it's just them wandering around the hotel drinking and eating carbs and, like, using the Greek staff as, like, their playthings. And
ew.
It's one of those things, like, it would be more fun if it were better filmed or better staged. It's just, like, so sloppy. And when they do Dancing Queen again,
doo-doo.
Oh my god,
take coffee away from me.
We're 5 years old, everybody. Like, the other plot point is she's like, oh, Amanda Seyfried's like, oh, my other dads can't make it, and so Colin Firth and Skellen Skarsgård come back and they bring all of, like, they bring all of Greece with them to come to the hotel for a big party, and they're like, oh, look on the boats, people are coming, and they're all on the boats, and Colin Firth and Skellen Skarsgård do this, like, Titanic visual joke, the whole I'm flying Jack thing. Uh-huh. And as they do that, with all the boats coming in, everybody just goes, you can dance, you can jive. And I'm like, what? At least, like, when Meryl did it in the first one, it was a call to arms to women to, like, be empowering and you can still have fun and be an awesome woman. In this, they're just like, remember when you loved this song in the first one and we're all on a boat?
Well, that's from the very get-go. That's exactly what I figured it was going to be like. You know, I knew that they were going to add new songs, but I also knew that they were going to reuse a lot of the songs. Because that's the good thing about Mamma Mia, is that Mamma Mia uses the best songs.
Yes, you know? Mamma Mia has the best songs from the catalog, and Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again, tries to have it both ways by getting lesser songs from the catalog. But, like, I think because I had legitimately heard that it was better than the first one, that it was just a better movie, I did not go in expecting Shakespeare, and I went in fully understanding that I was sober and that I was going to be compromising my entertainment factor with this movie. Mm. I did expect there to be some more work done to incorporate those old standards. The best one they do is when Lily James, young Donna, who I don't know who that is. You don't Lily James, bitch?
Lily James? I'm looking her up.
She is the ingenue of our dreams. She did the Cinderella remake, the one with Cate Blanchett.
Her full name is Lily Chloe Nanette James. Calm the fuck down.
That gives you an idea of just how beautiful white and blonde she is.
Well, she's brunette and British. In this photo.
Oh, well, she's not a natural brunette.
She's a year younger than me.
She's blonde in most things I see. That's gives you another idea. She did Baby Driver, if you saw that.
I've watched some clips of Baby Driver. That.
Yeah. And then if you ever watched Downton Abbey, she's what I call the cousin Oliver of Downton Abbey. So like Downton Abbey, they had like three daughters on the show, and they were Michelle Dockery, the Jan, and then the young one, I think her name was Sybil. And when Downton Abbey exploded, the youngest one went, "I'm really famous now. I think I'll go be a movie star." So she left the show. And of course that didn't happen. And they brought on Lily James as their cousin, whoever, I forget, that cousin Rose maybe. And they're like, "Oh yes, we forgot that we have a young hot cousin as well to replace the young daughter." Yeah, and she was annoying on the show because the character was annoying, but I called her the cousin Oliver of Downton Abbey.
Yeah, I get that. Good, solid Brady Bunch ref.
Thank you.
She's also doing the theater version of All About Eve next year.
No way!
Wikipedia.
With Kate Blanchett?
I guess so. She's playing Eve Harrington at the Noel Coward
Good
Theater.
Good for her.
So yeah, that's applicable to what we do.
It is absolutely applicable. Listen, bitch, Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again has so many theater people. It's a sequel to a theater musical.
Abortion.
So yeah, we're still in the mold. If anyone's tuning out now, they can go fuck themselves. This is all to say Lily James is actually really wonderful in the movie. She's like legitimately good in it. And it's that weird thing where I was watching her in her scenes going, I can hear how bad the dialogue is and see you be a smart actress to make it work without me feeling like you're trying to prove you're a smart actress. Mm. Does that make sense? Because a lot of times I feel like you can see actors trying to show audiences that they're smarter than the character or better than the material.
Yeah, no.
Just play them.
Yeah, no. Who's amazing at that is Jesse Mueller. Jesse Mueller is a prime example of that, you know?
Yeah. Jesse Mueller is really good at doing that, except... usually when I was talking about it, I meant like it's a little, I sort of mean it as a criticism word to certain actors. I think Jesse Mueller does the Lily James thing in this movie, which is you can see her elevating the material and showing how smart of an actress she is without calling attention to that.
Yeah, I agree.
There are other actors where I feel like they make it a point to show like, I am better than this material. I'm going to show you me working really hard.
Yeah.
What Jesse Mueller does every day on stage is what Lily James does in Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again.
Into it.
And there's a scene where she breaks up with young Pierce Brosnan because she finds out he has a fiance, and her friends are with her in this cafe, and she's like, I can't sing today, because she decides to be a club singer, and they're like, well, sing what you feel. And she starts singing a slow tempo version of Mamma Mia, and then it eventually it builds up to like a full... foot stomping version of Mamma Mia, and it works. Like, you can kind of see it coming, but you're also like, this fits, this works really well. I was hoping for more of that rather than just like Dancing Queen Colin Firth on a boat. Because then I'm just like, can you like at least try, can you muster the same creativity you did to write Christine Baranski the line of a lifetime, Be Still My Beating Vagina.
Well, have we found a title for this episode?
I think so. Maybe, would it be Be Still My Beating Vagina or Be Still Christine Baranski's Beating Vagina?
Be Still Our Beating Vaginas.
Oh my God, John.
That's right.
Thank you.
That's right. Call me Stephen Sondheim.
Oh, call you daddy? I also, if you do end up seeing it, I would like to hear your reaction to Meryl Streep's intro shot, because she is in the movie. She's towards the end of the movie.
She does film something new for this movie. I thought they were literally just only going to use stock footage of her previous.
You would think, because like all the trailers are stock footage of her.
Yeah.
But no, she's in the mega mix at the end, and she has one number towards the end of the movie. I won't say which one, but. Because I had heard when it was going to happen, but I was not prepared for how they establish her presence. And I will say I found it very, very jarring.
Yes. Thank God. Yeah, I was like worried you were going to say you found it moving, and I was like, oh, damn it.
No, it was a moment where I was like, I can tell they want me to be moved right now, but because of how it was filmed, I just couldn't. And, like, God bless her, and God bless Amanda Seyfried for really trying. Like, they work really hard to make you try to feel something in that scene, but the way that it's shot, the way that it's placed, you just can't.
You're so good at saying her name, Amanda Seyfried. I have such issues with it. And so every time you say it, I just get so distracted by the fact that you're so good at saying it. Because I think actually for years I've just been calling her Amanda Siegfried because it's easier.
I am not ashamed to say it's because I do say her name a lot because I actually think about her a lot.
Okay.
I enjoy her as an actress. I enjoy her presence in most movies. I was one of the few people that was supportive of her casting the Les Mis movie.
Okay.
Not after the
fact. I was
going to
say, were you still after? Yeah, that's the important thing.
Yeah, no. There were very few people after the fact that I was supportive of. But when she was cast, I was like, I see why she's being cast in this movie.
Yeah.
In this specific role. But yeah, no, I enjoy her. So I say her name a lot.
Seyfried.
Amanda Seyfried.
Seyfried. Seyfried.
Amanda Seyfried. I think I say it with an S, but like with a very soft S.
Seyfried. Like a half Amanda Seyfried. Amanda Seyfried. Amanda Seyfried. It's almost the same thing. You also
say it three times in a mirror, and you'll turn into an ingenue.
Finally. My time has come. Rushes to mirror with my long, blonde, curly, flowing locks.
You had a status the other day. It was about Evan Hansen, and it's really made me laugh.
It was yesterday because it was the I realized yesterday the moment when I was Googling the word Stan because I've seen it so much online recently, mm-hmm. especially in the theater community. You know, I'm a this stan. And Annie Mientis retweeted me like 2 days ago. And so mm-hmm. it's always so fun when someone who has like all that huge, crazy Broadway popularity, like 80,000 followers, to see mm-hmm. like the then like hordes of people who then just like his retweet because they just like his stuff, period. And it's all these like kids who, and mine was a Spring Awakening tweet too, so you know a lot of people, like the people who are retweeting it or liking it, were a lot of these young Spring Awakening kids, and mm-hmm. they all would be Stan was in their name a lot. It would be their usernames would be something like Dear Evan Hansen Stan or Spring Awakening Trash Stan or something like that, and I couldn't help but ponder, as I have for months, maybe the past year or so when I've seen it, what is a stan? And so I looked it up, and it's just it's so disappointing. It's a super fan.
Yeah,
that I don't know why.
I think it's a combination of stalker and fan.
Oh, is that what it is? It didn't say stalker online, but that actually makes sense to me because I was trying to understand where the ST came from. But that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so it was the moment that I looked up the word Stan was the moment that I realized I've fully aged out of Dear Evan Hansen, you know?
Yeah. That's when you really realize just how old you are. Yeah. Stans are a very tricky new element to the theater community.
Yeah, I just didn't know.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's why I'm still very adamant that like theater is as relevant now as it has been for a long time. Like it is very much coming back with a full force because of this young community that are now interested in things like Dear Evan Hansen and Mean Girls and Spring Awakening. But because it's also so tangible, I guess, because like Broadway actors are people that you can see at a stage door and you can see them on Instagram and whatnot. They seem very relatable. The lines start to get blurred with the fans or the stands, and it gets a little scary.
I've witnessed that as well. You know, it's hard just because you try to stand up for what you believe in, and
I hate you so much. Thank you, everybody. This has been our last episode ever of Broadway Breakdown. You heard it here. I'm done.
We're done. Goodbye, everybody. We're retired.
I'm going to go to a Greek island and take young Colin Firth's virginity in France.
Oh, story of my life.
I wish that were the story of my life.
I don't even remember which one. Is that who she ends up? Is that who her father really is, Colin Firth? I don't even
You never find out who her father really is.
Wait, you don't?
Because they decide to not do a paternity test. She just decides that all three of them are her father. But Pierce Brosnan is the one who Meryl Streep ends up with.
Yes. Okay, that rings a bell to me. I guess I always just figured that, like, I don't know, maybe I've always just fallen asleep the moment when they say they're not going to do a paternity test. Because I always just figured that they thought, oh, he must
be the father. It's always implied. It's that there's like a moment where she goes, I know we can find out who my father really is, but I like it better this way. And everyone's like, me too. And then they leave it at that.
It's like you invited three men to uproot their lives to see if you're their child to come to the Greek islands. The least you could do is at least give them an answer.
Exactly.
Amanda Seyfried. Like, Seyfried.
Oh, Amanda.
Amanda Deep Fried. You know, it's
Amanda Deep Fried.
That's me. Listen, stupid. I'm done talking about Mamma Mia because if we don't stop now, we'll never stop.
Yeah, Mamma Mia 2, here we go again. I'm pretty sure we've discussed it for like 30 minutes now. It's all fine. I'll edit this shit down so it's not forever.
Thank you. Yeah, we've literally been talking about it for what seems like since the first Mamma Mia came out.
Yes. On a more positive note, we'll wrap things up shortly, but I do want to end it on a positive note and literally theater related.
Yes.
I was very fortunate enough to go see the Barrow Street Theater's production of Sweeney Todd this weekend.
It's so good.
It is fucking amazing. Oh my God. I wanted to see it for a while. It has always been rather difficult to get tickets. At least I've found. Yes, because tickets are expensive, and I really try not to spend too much on theater tickets because I see theater a lot. I try to either get TDF tickets or Rush or Lottery or what have you, or sometimes I get very fortunate and I have family who wants to take me, or my editor takes me and I get to go in that respect. But getting like Sweeney Todd tickets that weren't $100 were very difficult. So I was very fortunate that I was able to go.
Especially if you get a pie
weekend.
Especially if you get a pie ticket, because you've got to get a pie ticket.
Yeah. Yeah, which I did. I got myself a veggie pie. Figured that was a safe bet.
The veggie pie is, I think, the more delicious one, too. They're both delicious, but the veggie pie is amazing.
I'm sorry, did you see Sweeney Todd more than once?
No.
Did you have two pies at your show?
Well, Adam got a pie, I got a pie.
Oh, okay, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Sorry, I did not eat my cousin's pie or his wife's pie, which actually sounds very...
Ew! Why would you say that?
Because they got pies. He got a chicken pie, she got a beef pie, I got a veggie pie. they offered a taste. I said, no, thank you. I offered a taste of the veggie. They said they didn't like veggie pies, and I went, fantastic, more for me.
Because the veggie pie was damn good.
It was damn good. But you know what was even better than the veggie pie?
The performances.
Yup. Yeah.
Who did you see
Holy
as Sweeney?
Shit, guys. So I saw Tom Semsa. I don't know how you say.
Oh,
his name.
I have no idea.
I knew him because he was in the original production of Jerry Springer, the opera. He played the guy who like rouses up the crowd. I don't forget his name. And then I think the devil after that.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy his vocals on that. But, you know, he's a little older now, so his vocals are a little more rough. Mm. But still fucking amazing. And then I saw Sally Ann Triplett as Mrs. Lovett, who I was like, her name sounds super familiar. So I looked her up after the show, because you get playbills after the show. She's the original Sue Snell in the Broadway production of Carrie. And, like, holy shit. It, like, blew my mind.
Yeah. She's really a wonderful...
I don't know how else to say this, guys. I've seen many live productions of Sweeney, as well as the filmed production with Angela Lansbury and George Hearn. This is probably my favorite live production I've seen of the show.
Yeah.
And she specifically has become my favorite Lovett. Even over Angela Lansbury, Patti LuPone, Emma Thompson, just like it's Holy shit,
yeah.
Did I love this production so much. It really, the intimacy was phenomenal. Oh. The pacing of the whole thing was phenomenal. If I had like any qualms with it, I would say I missed, they make some trims here and there just because it is it's a cast of seven.
They do make
and they
trims,
have to double yeah. as, yeah, they have to make cuts for some stuff. But like the majority of the cuts are small. Like I think they cut a verse from A Little Priest and they would like cut some of the Sweeney Todd ballad reprises in half, so they'd still be there. They just wouldn't be as long.
Yeah, and didn't they cut part of the letter, or didn't they make the letter like one person?
The letter is now just Sweeney and the judge, and it's spoken. It's not sung anymore.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm fine with, just because by that point in the show, we're so revved up to go.
We want to see blood.
I always found the letter kind of stops the show in its tracks a little bit.
Yeah. I only asked because I'm sure you remember that in my community theater high school production of Sweeney Todd, I was one of the letter soloists.
My God. Was your solo Young for the Young Sailor?
Probably. I don't remember. I don't even remember what I did this morning. So all I remember is that I at one point said some... You're honorable, just sir. But you know that kind of thing. That that's what I remember.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. The one thing I do love about the musicalization of the letter is how they all do it, or one person literally just sings "Young" on its own to like underline to the judge how much more desirable Anthony is than he is.
Young.
Exactly. But they do that. The only other cut that I was bummed by, and I understood why they did it, was second half, after Joanna gets freed from the insane asylum, the ensemble comes out as the patients and they sing City on Fire, Rats in the Grass, and Lunatics Stealing at the Moon, It's the End of the World. Yes. So they cut that stuff, but and they cut the Will We Be Married on Sunday? That's what you promised. Married on Sunday.
I know. I missed those as well.
I missed that. Yeah. It's because that's such an exciting stuff. But
and
they do include...
And it's also the highest Joanna sings in the show. It's either a B or a B flat. And so I'm always waiting for that B.
Kiss me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the whole thing is really exciting. It's like really great like chase sequence.
Yeah.
But I do understand why they had to cut it, because again, it's an ensemble of seven that everybody's doubling up as roles, and they really can't
afford
establish to the audience exactly like who everybody is as they're trying on multiple hats. So I get that, and they do a good job still of showing what's going down in that scene. But overall, like, the whole thing I thought was just so brilliantly done, and it was probably the most terrified I've ever been watching Sweeney almost kill Joanna. I would say spoiler alert, but this show is like 40 years old now, so if you think it's a spoiler, go fuck yourself. And it's also like one of the most known shows in the musical theater canon, so again, go fuck yourself, buddy. There's this, you know what I'm talking about, the scene where Joanna's hiding in the barbershop and he finds her.
Yep.
The way they do it in this production, holy shit, was it disturbing.
Yeah.
Because there are moments in the show where Sondheim and Hugh Wheeler really kind of wanted to sort of sweep you up in the momentum of the action. So like when you think he's going to slit the judge's throat and then he instead sings Pretty Women, that's usually one big swooping moment. In this production, they literally have a moment of silence for like a full on minute where you're not quite sure what Sweeney's going to do.
Yep.
And the same thing with Joanna. Usually it's this really hurried moment where he grabs her, she ducks and she leaves. In this production, he like has her cornered behind the bar, and it's just, there's no music, there's nothing, and all you just see is this girl like sobbing, and he like whips out the blade and you see her shudder, and like I felt violated on her behalf. It was so beautiful and brilliant. I could not get over it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They did so many...
So see it.
They did so many smart things in that production. Their use of, like...
Mm-hmm.
The very beginning, their use of utensils as instruments. Mm-hmm. Just brilliant. Oh, yeah. You know, it's... They're
absolutely.
Oh, and God, That's Good is cut extremely, too, isn't it? If I remember correctly, I think they...
The only thing they cut... They cut most of Sweeney stuff in God, That's Good.
Yeah.
Which I get, again, because they can't really show the chair situation,
right?
So what they do for, so what they actually, something I thought that was really funny was they force everybody out of the theater during intermission.
Oh yeah.
Because they have to make some changes to the interior, and the actors come out and chat you up, and Tobias comes out and does the first intro
and welcomes you back
song.
In. Yeah.
Yes, and you see the shop and everybody sits down and they do God That's Good. And you know, and the cast still does the ensemble stuff, like God That's Good, right. That is D. And they still include some Sweeney stuff, but they don't include the bit about him waiting for the chair, about the chair arriving. They just show you the bit with the I'll knock three times, mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, to show you their process of how they're gonna discard of the bodies. So yeah, like it's not cut to smithereens. It's just it's trimmed a bit.
This is one of those rare exceptions of a reimagining of a musical that's been in the musical theater canon, where a lot of times I feel like when you go and see these reimaginings, you have to have a good amount of context about the show. You have to know how it was done previously. And I feel very strongly that with this one, it stands so well on its own. You know, if this is the first production of Sweeney you've ever seen, you wouldn't be missing anything at all. You would really be
exactly
having given everything completely handed to you. You know, it's all still so there in the story. That's what the other thing that I loved so much about it was, that it was in the story of the show. You know,
absolutely. So, and it worked so well. And to confirm that for you, my cousin's wife had never seen anything of Sweeney Todd ever before. She never seen the movie, never saw the show, never listened to it, anything.
I
mean, like, they're theater lovers. They like to go see shows a lot, so it's not as if they're, you know, randos. And she said, she's like, the only thing was that every now and then she would miss a word here and there, because it's a small theater and they're not mic'd, so it's depending on where you're sitting, you might miss a verse here or there. But she's like, I understood all of it, like, plot-wise, character-wise. And she's like, I honestly could not imagine this on a grand stage. And I was like, this production did its job then.
It
was so good. And the ensemble is great. It's, I don't know how many people in this cast have been in it from the beginning. When I saw Betsy Morgan actually came back as the beggar woman in Pirelli, and she was fantastic. But the rest of the ensemble, like, I don't know. I know it wasn't the original Joanna and Anthony.
Yes.
But I don't know if it was the same judge or the same Beatle, but everyone in it was just like, everyone was in, and it was in the same production, you know, in the same world.
I definitely know it wasn't the original Beatle, because I think the Beatle you saw was probably John Rapson. I saw him on the Gentleman's Guide tour. He was amazing. He was the Jefferson Mays role. He was the Dice Quiz.
Oh, wow. That might be the same person. I can't remember, because the guy who's doing it now, his bio also mentions
Gentleman's Guide. No, that's who I saw as the Beatle. He's still doing it, but he wasn't the, I think you were talking about like replacements and originals, like he didn't start in this production. He joined later on. I'm not sure if anyone's still left from the original.
I think Betsy Morgan's the only one then, and she came back to close out the run. But even so, everyone is on the same page, everyone is in the same world, and bringing some really fascinating colors to their roles. Like, I was very impressed with the actors playing Anthony and Joanna, which are usually kind of like wet rag sort of roles. Like, they're meant to sort of just be the young lovers. It's sort of how Sondheim wrote them. But those two actors really found colors in those roles to make them come alive. The actor playing Anthony specifically, I remember, found a really good laugh in Act Two when he finds Sweeney's like, Joanna's in a madhouse, and Sweeney comes up with the idea to make him a wig maker to get Joanna out. And he goes, I assume you know Joanna's hair color. And the guy playing Anthony just looks very determined. He goes, yellow. Right. And the entire audience is like, you stupid fuck. And we're like, good for you, buddy. Like, that's not a line that ever has gotten a laugh once.
I love
and that
dumb, was, like, pretty boys.
Oh, shit. don't we all.
Knocks things over.
That was a dumb pretty boy in John's closet that fell out.
Oh, sort of was.
So this is all to say, everybody, be wary of Cats the movie.
Yes.
Get drunk and then see Mamma Mia 2, Here We Go Again, especially if you're a 16-year-old. And actually, though, do try and go see Sweeney Todd at the Barrow Street before it closes, because it closes at the end of August, and it is just fucking wonderful. I cannot get over how wonderful it was.
I love that production.
And I realize, like, how long it's been since I really loved a musical production that much.
Mm-hmm.
I think not since probably Fun Home on Broadway, or like Shuffle Along, maybe, that like I walked out of a theater being like, I loved just about everything about that.
Oh,
like to such a great degree. And I'm now officially obsessed with Sally Ann Triplett, and anything she does from now on, if it's in America, I will go see.
You're a Sally fan. You are. If an actress's name is Sally, you're gonna love them. My mom's name is Sally. Yep, she's not an actress.
Is she an actress?
No, but
well, then go fuck her.
But she's Sally. She sure is that.
She is a Sally. I know. I love me a good Sally Murphy. I was watching Soap Dish the other day, and I realized how much I love Sally Field.
Sally Field in that movie. God.
What a f- I know, right? National fucking treasure.
National treasure.
Yeah. I feel like we're ending this on a good note now. What with Sweeney and Dell?
I think so, too. I mean, yeah. I mean, go do all those things Matt said. Every time you have a cup of coffee over the next month, think of me and know that I am with you inside your mouth with that coffee.
Oh, John, you're always inside my mouth.
You'll be in my mouth no matter where you are. You know?
Okay. Well, I think that's as good a cue as any to wrap this episode up, don't you?
Yeah, don't be a fool. Wrap it up, y'all. Yes, this has been such a glorious little episode. I'm so excited for life.
As am I. I think I know what diva I want us to close this out with.
Who?
May I be so bold? Grand Dame Christine Baranski.
Oh, perfect. Does your mother know that you're out? I know she does.
She does. My mother has known that I'm out for 14 years now. Yeah. It's been a grand old time.
Well, look at you. Just so gay. So old.
I'm a dancing queen.
Young and sweet, holy 17.
Oh, to be 17 again.
Oh, God. How I miss it. No, I don't.
How I miss it. All right, no. I don't miss being 17 at all.
Play us out, Miss Baranski.
Play us out, Miss Baranski. See you guys at the next Broadway Breakdown.
See you guys. This has been Jawa Scavish.
And Matt Goblick. Bye. Thanks, Christine. Take us away.
Thanks, girl.
Now you're so cute.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.